Exercise 24, Talk 1. Listen to part of a lecture in a history class. The professor will discuss gold coins.
In 1792, Congress passed an act authorizing the coinage of gold eagles valued at $10, half eagles valued at $5, and quarter eagles valued at $2.50. These gold coins were standardized to silver on a 15-to-1 ratio, that is, 15 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. Although the ratio was reasonable at the time that the bill was passed, by the turn of the century, the ratio in Europe had reached 15¾ to 1, and the overvalued gold coins in the United States were either smuggled out of the country or melted down. Gold therefore disappeared from circulation until 1834, when a new law reduced the weight of gold pieces. Soon afterward, gold coins appeared in a smaller size and returned to circulation. The new interest and demand for gold encouraged the mint to strike $20 double eagles and a smaller number of $50 gold coins. The financial uncertainty during the Great Depression of 1929 encouraged hoarding of gold coins by individuals, a situation that became so serious that the government finally ordered all gold coins to be turned in. During the next several years, a number of amendments exempted certain kinds of gold coins and allowed limited collecting. Since then, the interest in collecting gold coins has increased, and the restrictions have decreased. Now, there are no restrictions regarding the export, import, purchase, sale, or collecting of gold coins in the United States.
Number 1. What is the main topic of this talk? Two. What was the value of the original gold eagle? Three. What was the value of silver to gold in 1792? Four. What happened after the law of 1834? Five. What are the restrictions on collecting gold coins today? Talk 2. Listen to part of a lecture in a music appreciation class. The professor is discussing the work of Stephen Foster.
Stephen Foster was one of the most prolific songwriters of his time, contributing more than 200 songs during his 20-year career. His first attempt when he was 14 was a forgettable composition called the Tioga Waltz, a melody for three flutes which debuted at a school exhibition. His first published piece appeared only 3 years later in 1844. It was called Open Thy Lattice, Love, and it was rather typical of the sentimental tunes of the time. Still, it was a good effort for a 17-year-old composer. But it was minstrel music for which Foster will always be remembered. The songs of Southern black slaves in the pre-Civil War days evoked nostalgic themes, like the plantation era that was already fated to pass into history. His first successful piece, O Susanna, became popular throughout the world and is still widely sung. Campton Races followed with similar success. The most successful song written by an American to that date was Stephen Foster's Old Folks at Home, which appeared in 1851. Some of you may recall it as Way Down Upon the Suwannee River, since it was also referred to by that title as well. In any case, an item in the musical world of New York stressed the unprecedented sales. at a time when half of all the sheet music published was a total failure and a sale of 5,000 copies was considered highly successful, Old Folks at Home sold nearly 100,000 copies. Old Kentucky Home, which came out 2 years later, capitalized on the reputation that Foster was making for himself and was also a huge seller. Now, what is interesting about the success of Stephen Foster is that he himself was ambivalent about it. Sometimes he hid his identity with pseudonyms. Sometimes he requested that his name be withheld from the cover to the sheet music. And other times he insisted that his name be displayed. Out of the context of the times, none of this seems to make sense. But when we contrast the musical world of high society with that of the common people, it becomes clear. Stephen Foster's success came from writing plantation songs for popular entertainment. The music was easy to remember, very repetitious, and available to everyone in the popular music halls. But the music that was considered serious and appropriate for society events was quite different. Foster proved that he could write such music, and perhaps had some secret desire to succeed on those terms, but that type of music didn't enjoy the widespread popularity of the plantation melodies that we still recognize today. Most school children have heard Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair and Beautiful Dreamer, but none would recognize the saccharine ballads and hymns that were considered by a genteel few his better music.
Number 1. What kind of music is associated with Stephen Foster? Two. Which piece was the most successful song written by an American? Three. Why did Stephen Foster withhold his name from the cover to some of his sheet music? Four. What best describes Stephen Foster's most popular songs? Five. What do we know about Stephen Foster?